And a lot of times families don't do that because they're afraid. They don't want to create waves. They don't want to rock the boat. But until a community starts paying you for your person to live there, your community is working for you.
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Welcome to episode 68 of the Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. My goal is always to empower you and your family to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for unnecessary medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. When you're considering moving your loved one into long-term care, it's likely that you have many, many questions about what it will be like for your loved one and for your family. You've got hope that's shrouded in mystery, maybe false beliefs and misconceptions that are engulfing you in fear of the unknown. In this episode of Navigating Rough Terrain with the Dementia Sherpa, Christy Turner, who has been a memory care director, will share her insider knowledge with you to help you get the facts you need to make the best decisions possible. Christy, talking about promises versus reality in long-term care, are we talking about what promises are made to us as a care partner versus what really happens, or something else?
We're talking about, we go in for a tour of a community and we get all these lovely promises and it sounds fantastic. And we say, where do I sign? And then comes reality.
I see. And I think,
dun, dun, dun.
And I have a suspicion. I'm picturing myself in this stressful situation, picking a home for, I don't know, my loved one. And you only hear part of what people say, and I know I have a habit sometimes of hearing what I want to hear.
Don't we all?
And I have a feeling that plays a little bit of a role here, because I hope that most long-term care facilities aren't over-promising, but is that the case or not? I mean, I know you can't speak for all of them, but...
I can't speak for all of them, but I can say there are an awful lot who do. And it's not necessarily nefarious. Sometimes it's just a breakdown of communication within the community. So the sales or community liaison or whatever they're called various things. But that person is telling you how terrific the community is and selling you on it. And then I've witnessed this with my own eyes. Later, they're going to a nurse or someone else and saying, I told the family X, Y, and Z, and the family just called and told me, no, none of that's happening. What is going on here?
That doesn't sound like a good way to start.
No, it's definitely not. And then the nurse, you know, nurse or whoever it is, like, well, sorry, XYZ happened or didn't happen, you know, because of this reason. And it leaves everybody in the community, everybody who works there, looking kind of dumb. And it leaves the family typically super pissed, which is completely understandable. And worst of all, it leaves the person who needed those services or that thing without it. And that's really the main point. So I think that we would all be better served. And I mean, everybody, professionals, families, person living with dementia, if we could all start singing from the same songbook instead of everybody being in a different place on this and just hoping to make a good impression and then crossing our fingers that later the services that were promised are actually delivered. The other point that's a really good one you made, Mike, is sometimes when we're in a high stress situation and we're desperately looking for a solution, we can hear what we want to hear. The best example of this that I can think of is I had family member of a person I was doing an assessment of. This was years ago when I was a memory care director, who later said that I had promised him that I could cure his wife's dementia.
Oh my.
Well, how about hell no? I would never say that ever. Because number one, if I could do that, if I could cure dementia, I wouldn't be saving it up for people, you know, during assessments who wanted to move into my community. I'd just be out there curing dementia and calling it good and teaching other people how to do it or bottling up the cure or whatever it is, right? I wouldn't be saving that for certain special circumstances. But I think that really speaks to your point of how people can really hear what they want to hear and then be extremely disappointed with the result. And honestly, because there were so many other issues with that particular situation, I don't know if that is even him hearing what he wanted to hear or if it was him making something up later. But you really want to, and this is a good tip for families, I think. I have a couple of good tips for families. Number one, please use a placement consultant who does a tour with you. So they're actually hearing what's said because they're not emotionally invested. So, and they're also narrowing down your search to places that can actually serve your needs, your loved one's needs, rather than kind of a more scattershot approach of you going to every place within a 20-mile radius on your lunch break or Saturdays or whatever. So that's one thing.
And then, Christy, I would just like to mention that you and I did a couple episodes, a little mini series on is memory care right for you? And in one of those, we have a fairly lengthy conversation on placement consultants. So I highly recommend our listeners that may have missed those episodes to look back through the Alzheimer's podcast library for those episodes. And I'll try to put a link to those particular episodes in the show notes.
Great idea. Yeah, absolutely. Another thing is to take notes while you are meeting with someone from the community. Take notes on what they're saying. Typically, they're going to hand you a beautiful packet that has all of their features and benefits and services and rate sheets and all of that. Take notes on those materials right there as you're talking to them. Ask questions. Another thing that I think works really well is bring another person with you that can be your designated note taker. That's also helpful. And then you can compare notes later too. Like, I think she said this, and see what the other person has to say. And then another thing is, if you have an iPhone, this is built in. There's just the recorder app. But if you have an Android, you can just download from the Play Store an app. I think mine's called Voice Recorder.
Okay.
It's free. And you just record the conversation. Just let them know, I want to make sure that I'm catching everything that you're saying. And I know I'm not maybe at my 100% best right now. So I'm going to record our conversation so I can refer back to it later. Okay. And that probably has, honestly, that probably has two benefits. Number one, you can go back and listen later. And number two, probably people don't want to be recorded saying something that might not be strictly true. So a couple of benefits to that method.
Yeah, I like the idea of taking notes. I also like the idea of having someone take notes with us. I mean, I like the recording too, but I like notes, but we got to be careful too. I mean, because when we have notes, it's good to go back and we read them and then we like realize, oh, wait, I wish I would have asked this, or what about this? It kind of helps our mind, think a little bit more about what's going on, and maybe helps us come up with questions that we can't answer, or we find the answers in our notes, right? So,
yeah, actually, my preferred method is to do both,
right? Okay,
because you can catch nuances in somebody's voice, or when you're kind of looking at them too. If you go back and listen to a conversation later, you can recall like what the face looked like as information was being conveyed. But while you're taking notes, and studies have shown this, when you are writing notes, it helps you remember longer later. So that it helps you remember that information. And this is distinctly different than typing notes into your laptop. It's the actual act of writing on paper that helps you remember. So I think that that's also very useful for sure. Then what you were saying, Mike, about going back and referring to your notes later, please do that, because when you do that, you do think of those other questions, just like you said, Mike, but also know that this isn't a one and done thing. You can absolutely call the person again and say, I was just reviewing my notes and here's what, here are the other questions that I came up with. Here are the other things I need to know. I think a lot of times, because that's sort of the message that's conveyed, is we think, okay, you get the one crack in the person's office to, you know, get your questions answered. And then after that, like, you need to say yes or no. The reason that we get that idea is because some companies have a corporate policy where, let's say you go in to tour on a Saturday and you say, great, thank you, appreciate your time. Look at everything. We'll think about it. Meaning you don't say yes on the spot. You don't cut a deposit check right then. So you walk out the door on Saturday. Corporate policy says they're going to call you Saturday afternoon. Say, hey, just wanted to let you know, we really appreciate your tour and we have this move-in special. And then they may or may not call you on a Sunday, but don't be surprised if they do. And they're going to call you on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday and Saturday. You see where I'm going with this? Like, corporate policy, some of them will say 10 touches in 7 days. And they're not going to stop until you say, yes, I'm bringing you a check. If you think letting it go to voicemail is going to help, it won't, because that doesn't count on their tally sheet. And remember, it's you versus somebody who's trying to keep her job. So, and I think I dive deeper into this in those episodes about why you'd really want to use a placement consultant. So I don't want to spend too much time on that here. But the point being, I don't want it to sound adversarial, but if somebody has a job title like sales and marketing or sales counselor or move-in coordinator or community liaison or things like that, typically their job is going to be to present their community in the best possible light to you and persuade you that this is where your person needs to live. That's what they're doing. Whereas your job is to figure out where the best place for your person is, what situation is most likely to meet your person's needs. So it's either going to be a beautiful confluence between the two, or there might be some pulling in different directions, right? But the point being, especially for this episode, is just being aware that there can be a pretty dramatic difference between what is promised and what happens once you actually initiate that move-in process and your person is there. So a salesperson is always going to be more polished and put the best foot forward than the reality that you may see on the other side of the door. I'm making it sound really awful.
No, but but there's one thing I want to mention is you want to go on the other side of the door, because I've been in my share of communities and a lot of them have this really grand hotel feel when you walk in and everything's lush. I mean, just plush, I should say, not lush, but, you know, it's just really grand. And then when you only get on the other side of the door is where your loved one's going to be spending the majority of their time, and see what it's like over there.
Right. That's a pretty big dramatic difference sometimes. And an important thing to know and to just really be aware of for yourself, for your own mindset before you are thinking about doing something like this is, if you feel like, okay, it's time for my person to live in a memory care community because my person has so-called behaviors that I don't feel like I can manage, or my person is confused a lot, or my person is often just kind of going through drawers and just kind of seems like walking around without really much of a purpose, and I'm not sure that I'm really meeting their needs or keeping them engaged. Any of these types of things that are leading you to think, okay, now's the time. Understand that other families likely felt the same thing you felt when they made that decision. So when you do walk onto the other side of the door, you're going to find people like your person and a lot more of them. And sometimes families are just, they go, oh my gosh, look at all these people. They're, and instead of the next logical thing coming out of their mouth, like, oh, they're just like my person. They're like, oh, these people, I'm not sure this would be a good fit for my person. These people look more advanced. And sometimes they will be more advanced than where your person is, but often they're not. It's just a shock to the family system to see more than one person at a time with this condition. And they kind of forget that, oh yeah, okay, my person's confused. Other people can be confused too. Other people might like to look through drawers or do things like that. And I think just probably as professionals, we don't do a great job of preparing the family for that reality. And for some people, they just don't have a very big level of comfort in being around older adults with health conditions, and it's sort of a shock to their system when they see not only older adults with health conditions, but a group of them together.
That's true.
And, yeah.
Well, and if you like me, I was never in the medical field or the community. I've never been around older adults that much until I started my journey with Together in This. And when I, you know, went into memory care communities and went down the different hallways, we'll say. You know, one hallway led to where people were sitting around playing music and kind of having a good time. And another hallway led to where there were a lot more nurses needed to care for the people who were a little more advanced. And it was an eye opener. And at first it, I don't remember the emotion I had, but it definitely made me pause. Mm-hmm. And I can see how, you know, any care partners that have never experienced that also would kind of pause as well, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because you just don't have any way of knowing what you don't know.
Right.
Until you encounter that. And so I think that that's something that's just really important. And as you've pointed out many times, Mike, it can look just beautiful on the outside. And that's great. But where people actually live, this is just like probably most of our own homes, right? It can look fantastic from the curbside. But then you get into our house and it looks like we live there. It does not look like a museum. It doesn't look like this, architectural digest layout. It looks like we actually live there. And that's okay because we do live there. So I'm always very suspicious of communities that are presenting this museum-like, and you see it more in brand new communities where, you know, they've spent a whole lot of money for an interior decorator and it just looks like it really could be photographed for Architectural Digest. And my question is always like, who wants to live here? This does not look livable. Where's the fun? Where's the, you know, how can you interact with the environment? And that's really what people living with dementia need.
Yeah. So let's talk about that a little more. The instead of just the aesthetics of the play, let's talk about how our loved one is kept active and stimulated. Are there times where that's overpromised, or are there times where maybe the care partners don't even really know to ask about that, and so it's never even promised, if you will.
Right. So it's often overpromised. So one good tip is to ask for the program calendar, ask for a copy of it if they don't have it in that packet they're giving you when they give you a tour. And then there, by regulation, there has to be a great big giant program calendar somewhere in that community where residents could walk up to it and easily read it. If the programming is from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. and it has things like happy hands or pretty nails and morning coffee, that's a crappy community sprint. Get out of there. don't even think about putting your person in there. Do not, don't waste your time finishing the tour. What they're telling you loud and clear is we really don't care about engagement. And when a place really doesn't care about engagement, there are going to be people who likely are on a whole lot of unnecessary medications, because bored people with dementia are going to look for something to do. And then it ends up being mislabeled as so-called behaviors. And then if they have this approach to engagement, I can pretty much guarantee their approach to so-called behaviors is going to be drug them up. Right. So get out of there. And a program calendar gives you massive clues to what's actually going on in there.
What would be some of the buzzwords or titles you would like to see on a program calendar?
Well, the titles really are not as important to me as the fact that there better be programming from well before 10 a.m. till well after 4 p.m.
Okay.
And so something that we've talked about a lot, Mike, is so-called sundowning, right? So that period from like 3 to 7 or 8 p.m. where folks can have an excess of energy that hasn't been burned off during the earlier part of the day, where lighting conditions can change depending on what part of the country they live in and the time of the year, where they are seeming restless, unsure what to do, feeling like they should be doing something, but they're not sure what, and left unattended, that can all create a perfect storm for a catastrophic reaction, or what's commonly called on the street, a meltdown. Right? Or sundowning. And what it means is all of those things that I talked about are happening all at one time, and then it becomes incredibly difficult to console the person. So if we know that this is a common challenge for people living with dementia, why wouldn't we have structured programming from 3 to 8 p.m.? We would, right? So if we see a community that does not have any programming past 4 p.m., I think that's a great time to get really suspicious about what's happening after 4 p.m. What happens after dinner? What time are you trying to get people to go to bed? What's your medication usage? That's where I get very, very suspicious, because something sketch is going on.
Okay.
I didn't expect to come this strong swinging out of the gate, but I'm bringing it. So,
well, you have the insider knowledge and the passion from having dementia affected your own life that it really makes a difference in how you, in what you're telling and teaching all of us, I think. So I think it's great. Christy, one thing that came up earlier, you know, and I remember when I used to go to, caregiver, meetings, and I was just sitting in to listen and understand people's struggles and experience. A lot of times they would be surprised by some of the cost that was coming along that they didn't expect. And earlier you mentioned how you get handed this big old packet of information and it has a rate schedule in there. So I just want to mention that you may think that you're getting all these things for that initial fee, but some of those are add-on fees, right? Like incontinence care maybe, or...
Sure. So that is another great reason to use a placement consultant who can help you wade through all of this. But depending on like the community and the company that runs the community and all of that, you're going to look at different fees. So some, there's what's called a base rate, and that covers room and board. And then above that is going to be things like incontinence care. Or I have actually, honest to God, hand on the Bible, seen memory care communities charge for queuing and reminders.
Oh my gosh.
You just can't make this up, right? I was like, no. No, that's the whole reason you exist, is to provide a therapeutic environment where queuing and reminders are built in.
Right. If you see that on the rate schedule, run.
Yeah. Don't even bother to look at the program calendar. I can always tell you this is a bad situation.
Right.
Yeah. So you see things like that. So some communities do something called levels. Other communities do something called points. So it just depends on what it is. So on a level system, you're going to pay a flat rate per level. So let's say the base is $3,500 a month, and then level one is an additional $500 a month, and level two is an additional $1,000 a month, and level three is an additional $1,500 a month, or however it works out. So you're going to get all the services included in each level. The problem with the level system is, let's say your person needs one piece of care that is provided in level one. Well, you're still paying an additional $500.
Okay.
If the community used a point system, though, and let's say it's $30 a point, instead of $500, an additional $500, your person would be paying just an additional $30 a month. But the point system can also rack up very quickly. So it really just depends on your particular situation, you know, what's going to be a good fit. That said, and this is another important thing for people to know, is you make the best decision you can with the information you have at the time you need to make that decision. Just because a place is on a level system right now does not mean they're not going to change to points. That can happen. Also, be wary of places that offer you something that sounds too good to be true, like, oh, it's memory care, but it's only $1,800 a month. What? Is this a special you're running? Is this for a limited period of time? Oh, no, it's only $1,800 a month. Okay, what's really going on here? So I would look, you know, that's probably where you are going to get hit with things like, it's $150 for queuing and reminders. It's $150 for incontinence care. It's, you know, right. $150 for snacks or whatever.
They're going to nickel and dime you up to $4,000.
Easily, quickly. Right. Yeah. So that's one thing to look at. And then the other thing too, is they'll quote you something very low. So you move in, and then within 30 days, you're called into the office for a service plan meeting. And gosh, we really didn't know that things were as bad as they are, but there's been a significant decline. And now your bill is suddenly an extra $2,500 a month.
So in that case, you would want to make sure you have the proper kind of contract in place to protect you against that.
Usually the community is going to win on that, typically, because they're going to say, you know, of course we need to charge for the services that we provide, and we just didn't know it was like this, and it magically is. And I would say this, unless there is a medical situation or additional condition that happened within that 30 days of moving in that you're aware of, I would be very suspicious about this sudden new brand new condition. And the argument that I would make would be, my person didn't have these issues that you say they're having. So let's use incontinence as an example, right? So your person moves in, they're continent. They might have an occasional accident, but they wear like the poise pads just in case, right? Just so they feel confident, but you know, they can manage that themselves. And now you're being told, well, they're incontinent of bowel and bladder and all these other things. My question would be, what have you done to cause that? Because it clearly is something related to the care here. So my person did not have a stroke. My person did not have a magical jump in progression from managing own occasional incontinence to incontinent of bowel and bladder. What new medications have you put on board that you didn't notify me of? I mean, you can see I can be a mama bear, but I would come flying over that desk with what is it that has happened here that has contributed to this sudden dramatic change in condition, and why wasn't I immediately notified that this was happening?
Okay.
And what steps have you taken to ameliorate this, to mm-hmm. reverse this, mm-hmm. and what is your plan?
Right, right.
And a lot of times families don't do that because they're afraid. They don't want to create waves. They don't want to rock the boat. But until a community starts paying you for your person to live there, your community is working for you. They're working for your person. Right. So,
Christy, one vision I had, and I'm going to change the topic a little bit here because we're coming up towards the end of the time, but I'm picturing I sit down with the salesperson, we're going to call them, and you know, they're giving me all these images of grandeur, and I'm picturing my loved one coming in and fitting in right away, and they're listening to music, and they're getting exercise, and they're having, you know, so now all of a sudden I've got this vision of my loved one in this whole different, having this whole different positive experience. But that's not really how it's going to work, because everybody also has a right to sit and just relax and sleep. And so I want to make sure that, you know, people don't think that there's going to be this huge, you know, change like that. I mean, sure, hopefully there's going to be engagement and all going on, but it may not to be where your loved one's doing the hula hoop all of a sudden or something.
Right. So that's a really good point to bring up. So one thing that I would ask the community prior to making a commitment to move in would be like, okay, so right now I feel like my person really is not involved in anything and I'd like to see that change. How would you do that? What would you propose doing? So remember, like, use some job interview techniques in this, because this is what you're doing, is interviewing this community, right?
Correct.
To see if they are a good fit. And so a good answer to that question would be, well, can you give me more information about what you mean when you say they're really not doing anything? Kind of like, so they're going to get more information from you as to what are the specifics of the situation. And then they're going to ask you, well, have you tried this, that, and the other, right? Because if this is a good place, they're actually going to want your person to just to have better quality of life, no matter where they live. And they're going to give you some tips on how to do that as soon as you leave their office. But number two is, you know, how does the staff approach people, right? So do they come by and say, hey, do you want to do hula hoops with us? And the person says no, and they go, okay, and they keep walking. Or do they even send somebody to the door to remind people, which the answer should always be yes. Do they do that? Or do they say, hey, I have some pretty exciting news. We are having a party down here. It's a Hawaiian theme, and it would not be the same without you. So I came to make sure that you are ready to roll. Do we need to get some lipstick on before we go? Are you feeling good? Because you look cute. Ready to go? Let's do it. So I am selling it. I'm excited about it. I want you to be a part of it. Let's do it. I'm here to include you. Right? Yeah, which is significantly different than, do you wanna? And then, you know, if the person says, you know, honey, I just don't feel very good, or I need a break. Okay. All right. Do you have everything you need? You do? Okay. Well, I'm going to come by and check on you later. In fact, I'm going to save you one of our little virgin pina coladas, and I'll bring it to you later. Okay. That's fine. The person is making a choice. That's okay. And we're not going to shame them or make them feel bad because they've made a choice that they need some space or they need to just kind of chillax for a minute. That's okay. But we can always go and check later. And then maybe they do want to get involved. So we're going to be persistent. We're going to have a great approach. But we're also going to be respectful of people's autonomy.
Okay. Well, that's all great advice as usual, Christine. I love how when we talk about memory care and long-term care, you're able to bring that insider knowledge because you were a memory care director for several years.
Yes, I was. And I know I made it sound like they're all awful. They're not all awful, but you know what they say about the news, right? If it bleeds, it leads. So we're right. Not going to talk about how wonderful everything is. We're going to point out the booby traps and landmines to you so you can avoid them.
Okay. All right, Christy, thanks again. And we'll talk again next week.
Sounds great. Thanks so much for having me.
This concludes our conversation with Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, right here on the Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. Be sure to check out the show notes for any mentioned resources or links at togetherinthis.com/episode68. And if you haven't subscribed to the podcast, you can do so there, and that way you won't miss any upcoming episodes. Bye-bye, and I hope you join us again next week. You've been listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.